Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed, our weekly unfiltered episode where me, Colin, and Mithal. I want to say hi, Mithal, because that's for some reason your screen name today. But Mithal, talk about criminal justice and true crime stories that have caught our eye in this past week. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
I was waiting to be 50 this year, but instead I'm jumping and going straight to 70 because while showering, I pulled a muscle.
Oh.
That's what I'm doing right now. Literally right now. And I'm just like, we're just going to skip decades here.
Wait, I can see your pulled muscle and raise you some kind of bone spur coming loose in my heel. All I did was get up from bed. I'm like, what just happened to my ankle, my heel?
Stay in bed and don't shower, folks.
There you go. That's after 50. Now, wait a minute. When do you turn 50? You've got some time.
This fall.
Oh my God. September, right?
Yeah.
Colin, are you still in the 40s?
September, I'm 50.
Oh, you are too?
Mithal and I are in the same range there.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to my world.
Couple of Virgos, I'm guessing.
Welcome.
That's right.
Yeah. It's great. The 50s are great. It's my favorite decade so far, notwithstanding the entire world being on fire. Yeah. But otherwise, it's great. All right. So let's see. Anybody want to start off with? Anybody got some updates? Anything they want to tell us?
No updates here.
All right. I do want to actually address, I should just pull it up and read it, an email that we got that was a slightly disgruntled email from one of our listeners, and it falls upon me. She upset with me, I think, so let me just find it. Okay. This is Angela. I'm not going to say your last name. It's for Angela. She says, I've been listening to Undisclosed since the beginning and admire the work you do. Everything seems so meticulously researched that I have been convinced right alongside your listeners of these wrongful convictions. Thank you, Angela. We do our best and try to correct the record when we get something wrong. Then she goes on to say, I think that is why I was so surprised to hear Rabia sharing Matt Gaetz statements about alien breeding programs and the conspiracy theory about the unrelated deaths of a handful of scientists out of the thousands who work for NASA or have access information from the government. I understand the unfiltered episodes are not as researched, but even a few moments of Googling outside of a rabbit hole should make someone skeptical of these stories. It was disappointing. Okay. Now, here's what I have to say about that. It is true. There are thousands and thousands of scientists that work for NASA. I still find it odd that we have nearly a dozen who, in the last few years, connected to a lot of similar programs, like something's happening to them. I find it even weirder that a number of them just put down this stuff and walked off into the sunset.
Right.
I feel like that's something, I don't know, that caught my eye. I have no idea. Now, on the Matt Gaetz thing, I use Matt Gaetz statements not as, it wasn't about like, you know, saying that because he said it, it's true. What Gaetz was saying was that as a member of Congress, he got the same kinds of briefings that the other congressman, I can't remember his name anymore, but the other congressperson, the other legislator I spoke about who has given numerous interviews saying, we are getting these briefings. If the public knew, they would be losing their minds. And so it was just to basically kind of corroborate that there are these briefings happening, and the few legislators who have spoken about them seem to be rather alarmed by these briefings. That's it.
Right.
Now, is there a connection between, I mean, like, you know, Mithal has sent me information about, like, you know, a lot of what the work these particular scientists were doing is about, like, energy resources and energy sources, not necessarily UFO. I have no idea. I don't know what they're doing. I don't think any of us will ever know what they're doing secretly because we should. These are like state secrets. We shouldn't know any of this stuff.
Sure.
Having said that, Angela, I hate to tell you, I think all three of us on this show believe in UFOs or alien life.
It's true.
I mean, like, didn't we agree on this? Like, there's something.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely something.
There's something. And so what that looks like, I don't know. I also regret to inform you that I believe in God, and that is super supernatural, Angela. So, and I have not researched that as meticulously as some of our episodes, but I am sorry for disappointing you. And I am not trying to say Matt Gaetz is necessarily a reliable source of information. I only mention that because he seems to corroborate with what another legislator has been repeatedly saying publicly. All right, let's get to our stories then this week. How about we start off with Mithal?
Okay. So my story is about two university students, doctoral students, actually, that went missing just a few weeks ago in mid-April, just days apart. Have you guys heard about
this? Yes, yep.
University of South Florida doctoral students, Jamil Limon and Nahida Bristy. So again, this is probably around April 16th. A few days after they go missing, campus police find Limon's passport, wallet, and bloodstained duct tape in his apartment trash. He lives off campus with two other roommates. University police bring in the local sheriff's office, and they take over from that point. They find more evidence in, like, the apartment complex trash compactor. And so they start off by obviously interviewing roommates. He has two roommates, actually. Hisham Abu Garbier, I think I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, sorry, and Rashid Bynum. Rashid was able to identify a number of things that were missing from their apartment when he was talking to detectives. And Hisham stated that he didn't know anything about his roommate's whereabouts. So, you know, they continue to do their investigation. And a week later, Limon's body was found inside black heavy-duty, like, utility trash bags in a nearby bridge. And basically a few hours later, law enforcement goes looking for Hisham, one of the roommates. They had tons of evidence against him. Inconsistencies with his alibi, GPS tracking data, ChatGPT searches about, you know, well, we'll get into that, but ChatGPT searches.
And he had a history, too.
Yeah, we'll also get into that. Okay. And so during one of their previous interviews with that other roommate, Rashid, he informs the detectives that he and Limon had actually filed a complaint against Hisham just 2 weeks prior, saying that they had concerns about their own safety because his behavior is really erratic. So, you know, again, it's the afternoon that Limon's body has been found. The authorities locate Hisham at his family's home. He has barricaded himself in the house.
Oh, God.
And eventually, after about a 90-minute standoff with a SWAT team, he comes outside. And obviously, he was immediately arrested and charged with murder. Now, just 2 days later, Nahida's remains were discovered in a bag by kayakers. Same, like, area where the bridge is, but not exactly the same location. So his charges were upgraded. 2 counts of first degree premeditated murder, among a bunch of other criminal charges. He's pleaded not guilty to all of those charges, and he's being held without bond right now. Now, on the face of it, it sounds like it's just another, you know, tragic story of young lives taken too soon. But I wanted to talk about some of the other layers underneath to see, was this preventable?
Has there ever been a time that you have noticed something like funny or concerning about what your dog is doing, like that you just originally brushed off? Like, let's say they're shaking their head or licking their paws incessantly, slowing down, just, you know, odd behaviors. Well, if you haven't realized that it's not just quirky dog behavior sometimes, there's something else probably going on because these are not normal dog behaviors. A lot of times, these kinds of signs and other signs, like if your dog's eating grass, if they're prone to ear infections, if they're getting rashes, or sometimes even if they have poor digestion and diarrhea, well, these are all signs of allergies. And what I learned is allergies in dogs often start in the gut. When things get out of balance internally, it can show up everywhere in issues with their skin, ears, digestion, and energy. And I know when you love your pet, it is hard to watch them be so uncomfortable. Just like us, dogs need good bacteria to strengthen their gut health and calm an overactive immune system. That's why I recommend Better Wild Allergy Relief Soft Chews to all of my friends who have dogs. They are designed to support your pet's allergy defenses by strengthening digestion and helping restore balance from the inside. They are the first and only chews with ancestral advantage wolf probiotics and natural ingredients proven to help reduce itching and support gut, immune, and skin health. So instead of just covering things up, you're actually supporting your dog at the source and helping them get out of their misery. And I promise you, it will not be a challenge to give your pup these chews because they will love the flavor and you will love feeling confident and secure knowing that you're looking out for your dog's health. Better Wild is committed to helping your dogs with clinically proven, veterinarian-approved solutions that you can feel great about. Right now, Better Wild is offering our listeners up to 40% off your order at betterwild.com/justice. That's betterwild.com/justice for up to 40% off your order. betterwild.com/justice.
you know, while Hisham is in custody, because of all this evidence, he's not a first-time offender, like you said. Mm. So he actually had multiple arrests years prior in 2023 for battery against his brother and mother, as well as battery and burglary of an unoccupied dwelling. When he was arrested for battery against his family members, he was kind of making delusional statements to the deputies, so they involuntarily committed him for a 72-hour emergency mental health observation.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. The family then filed a domestic violence petition against him, which was granted, and that barred Hisham from approaching his brother or the family home. Now, eventually that petition expired, and so when his brother went in to request an extension, it was denied. As part of kind of, you know, his punishment, Hisham had to complete a diversion program in 2024, which he did. And so because of that, his charges subsequently were dropped from his record. Now, that means when he moved into his apartment, because he wasn't a current university student, he had moved into his apartment in 2024. So when he filed that application, the apartment management obviously would conduct a background check, but he didn't have anything on his record. So they're like, okay, he's fine. So he was able to move into that place because of that loophole with the program. And because the extension that his brother tried to file, he was also legally allowed to be at his family's home. So, you know, it's interesting. We'll see what will come of this case. Prosecution, I think, is they've suggested that they might go for the death penalty. And his defense hasn't really said anything yet. But, you know, maybe they'll plea an insanity plea or try to challenge the use of the ChatGPT log saying it's private, even though obviously we know of cases where people have been convicted because of that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's like, should the police have already been keeping an eye on him? Was the apartment management supposed to notify the police or maybe evict him so that maybe then these murders could have been prevented? You know, what are your thoughts on this case and that background info?
Yeah. I have a couple questions. First of all, have they established the motive? Is it just that there was
nope.
ongoing beef between them?
There's no motive. I mean, that's kind of another thing that defense could challenge, because besides his erratic behavior, it's not like they had only been living together maybe for like a year, year and a half. And so it sounded like so maybe the first or the beginning of April is when he started kind of acting off. And, you know, according to his own family, they're saying he was fine. He was, you know, a good son and a cool guy. But then he's been using a lot of medical marijuana, and now he's become extremely aggressive because of that.
Medical
and
marijuana? So, isn't that supposed to do the opposite?
You think the opposite
supposed
effect,
to help.
But...
Right. But not that I would know, saying, you know, but his extensive use of it has turned his behaviors to be more aggressive.
How are the victims killed? Do you know? Was there like a weapon, or I'm like, were they shot? Like, what do you have? Do you have an idea? That's one thing I haven't seen.
I don't know.
Yeah, I've read a couple stories.
I don't know, but I mean, his ChatGPT searches suggest maybe they were shot, but don't know.
Okay.
Because he searched a bunch of different things, including like how to dispose of a body. And if you put him in a trash bag, how can somebody tell?
Oh,
and like,
my
things
Lord.
Like that.
Yeah. Well, one interesting thing here, I noted earlier, I didn't have an update, but I do, which is that on Friday, we filed the reply brief in the Amanda Lewis appeal. Mm. And the way that bears upon this is, if you recall from our Amanda Lewis series, she was given the option, we can either prosecute you for a capital murder, possibility of the death penalty, with 12 jurors, or in Florida, they have the option of a jury of only 6 jurors. And so they offered her, we'll take the death penalty off the table if you agree to a jury of 6. That's what she did. That reduces the likelihood of a hung jury. And so I'll be curious here to see if they offer the same thing to this defendant.
Yeah.
I mean, why would they? I feel like they might have him dead to rights.
Seems kind of open and shut. Yeah,
seems pretty open and shut, especially given those histories.
But if his defense just says like, oh, it's a mental health issue, like after that 72 hours, you know, he was let go. He did the program, you know, and that's good enough. I mean, we did our job.
But even then, it doesn't mean he didn't do it, right? I mean, like, that is accepting responsibility True. For it. There's no like innocence claim he can make, whereas in Amanda's case, a whole different, you know.
And just looking here at the insanity defense in Florida, it requires clear and convincing evidence that they couldn't understand that their actions were wrong. And so if he is trying to claim not guilty of insanity, he has to prove it by clear and convincing evidence.
I feel like the ChatGPT searches might actually negate an insanity defense.
But they're also kind of using that mental illness thing to suggest that maybe because of that, it couldn't have been premeditated because he wasn't there enough to really be able to plan it out in that way.
Was he doing the searches before he killed them or after he killed them? Because if it was before he killed them, then I think but either way, I feel like that shows some kind of rational thought process, yeah. Right? And I do remember when this couple, and I think they were a couple, were missing for a while, and like the parents were freaked out, and they're both South Asian, and so I thought, I'm not even kidding, I was like, oh, they just probably ran away because their parents won't let them get married. I mean, this is, you know,
if only.
Yeah. I know, it's really tragic. I will go ahead and pick up from there because it's not exactly the same set of circumstances, but there are issues here in terms of legal access to, you know, things like ChatGPT and stuff. So this is a story that began back in 2021. A woman by the name of Jennifer Camras, I think I'm saying her last name right, K-A-M-R-A-S, Camras. She was a nurse practitioner. At the time, she worked for Advent Health. She had been working for them for about a year. And in 2021, she was terminated. At the time she was terminated from the position, she was 9 months pregnant, ready to give birth pregnant, okay? Of course, this is very distressful for her. She needs the work to support her family, and who is going to hire a woman in that condition? I mean, imagine, right? Who's going to do it? So as part of the benefits she got for working with Advent, one of them was that she had access to something called Talkspace. We know what Talkspace, a lot of us know what Talkspace is. This is a telehealth online therapy platform. And she was using it to get therapy online with a real therapist through their platform. And, you know, with that therapist, she was sharing her concerns about, you know, her stress, you know, the family situation, what's happening at work, all these things. Now, a few months after she's been fired, she filed a lawsuit against Advent Health. She filed a pregnancy discrimination claim, and Title VII prohibits employers from terminating an employee because of the employee's sex and because the employee is pregnant. So she files this claim, and her legal team asks her therapist, the therapist that is with Talkspace, to testify on her behalf. And I'm assuming because they want to show, her state of mind at the time, you know, like, you know, what she's going through, how she perceived the firing to have, why she perceived herself, why she got terminated. So when she did that, the defense, meaning Advent's attorneys, said, okay, fine, well, then we're going to bring in, they got a court order to get all of the Talkspace records, which, so, you know, like when you have a therapist in person, they might take notes, right? But Talkspace will have a transcript of your conversation. Mm-hmm. It's a word by word transcript of the entire conversation. Now, I wasn't aware that these conversations were being transcribed. Anyhow, and they were able to get this in. Now, I could not find, I mean, and you know, I don't have access to all kinds of legal tools, but I could not find how and why they were allowed to let them in. And I want to ask Colin what he thinks about that. But what ended up happening is, you know, this transcript is turned over, it's produced in court, and you know, at the end of the day, I don't know if the transcript made a difference to the merits of the claim, because the judge found basically that she couldn't sue them because it wasn't a pregnancy discrimination issue. That's not what she was terminated because the facility she was working at was being closed down. So you see what I'm saying? So so that didn't fly. But on the issue of this whole thing, There was, and I got most of my information. I did not find a lot of coverage of this, but there's a site called Proof News, and this is from their reporting. And they just like dropped this report on it about a week or so ago. So according to their investigation, Talkspace records and stores the text, video, and audio messages with clients. And the company's CEO recently told investors that they have amassed one of the largest mental health data banks in the world, containing 140 million message exchanges. The end goal being they're going to be training a soon-to-be-released AI therapy companion bot.
Of course.
Yeah. So they're using these messages to train this bot, okay? Of course, this raises questions about HIPAA, you know? Under HIPAA, psychotherapy notes do have special protection, but the court classified the messages as the treatment itself. And I did not know that there's a distinction between like the consultation part of it versus the treatment part of it. But they said, nope, these notes are like integrated into her medical record. And that's why everything that she typed was fully discoverable, or anything that was transcribed was fully discoverable. Mm-hmm. Talkspace also says, listen, like when you sign up for this, you sign a disclaimer form. You sign, and if you don't want to share your personal data, you don't feel uncomfortable, then don't use our services. That's literally their privacy policy says that. Says do not use our services. When you sign up for Talkspace, and I'm sure other similar platforms, you have to agree to the company's privacy policy. And it actually states that they can use the chat, audio, and video communication to develop new products. Now, folks who live in the European Union, they can opt out of some of this, but U.S. residents cannot opt out of it. They can request their data be deleted, but otherwise you've basically signed off on it and are okay to it. So, you know, I have heard many, many times that people are using ChatGPT and Claude and other AI bots for therapy.
Yeah.
And none of that, I believe, would have any kind of HIPAA protection. I think all of that would be discoverable in a court of law, right? In this situation, Colin, what I wanted to ask you was, do you think the court allowed it in because they were going to be presenting the therapist in court and they kind of opened the door to that? Is that what happened?
Absolutely.
Here?
And yeah. So for any professional privilege, whether it is attorney-client, priest-penitent, or psychotherapist-patient, if I keep that door shut, I'm not calling my priest or my rabbi. I'm not calling my attorney. I'm not calling my psychotherapist to testify about the therapy session. With some exceptions that are small, the evidence can come in. But Robbie, the point here is they called the psychotherapist, had them testify in a way that was favorable to the plaintiff. In any jurisdiction, that's going to open the door for everything that happened during those sessions to come into evidence.
If they had not called the therapist, do you think they still could have gotten those records in, given that
even though she's
waived her, like she's signed this privacy policy agreement, she's agreed, as like all the other consumers using it, that you can use our stuff, you know, you can use this. But it does say, it's very specific, yeah, to develop new products, not necessarily.
Right, exactly, yeah, for a limited purpose, which is interesting because I don't know if you two have experienced it, but there's the TV show The Pitt on HBO, and a big plot point this season was about using the AI assistant to take notes. My last doctor's appointment, not to a psychotherapist, but to a dermatologist, the doctor said, look, to assist me in my note-taking, do you consent to me using my AI assistant to transcribe what we discussed and summarize the appointment? Yeah. And so I, you know, not just these telehealth online, but I think more and more in person, we're going to see this type of thing being used.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do think it's protected as long as I don't open the door as the plaintiff and the patient.
Okay. What about the fact that the employer was paying for it? I don't think that should make a difference.
No, because most health insurance is, you know, employer provided. So same thing. If I don't open the door, it shouldn't come in.
It's super weird that her lawyer decided to do that, don't you think?
They must have thought they had a weak case without the psychotherapist, because otherwise I can't imagine why. I think she'd have a pretty strong claim for malpractice, unless there was a really strong reason to call the psychotherapist.
But wouldn't her lawyer have known, like, I'm opening this door for them?
She should have. They might not have known that the logs existed.
Mm.
That might be what they didn't realize.
But also, did the lawyers not know the facility was closing? And that was the actual thing. I mean, like, I feel like the facts of the case were going to be hard to overcome for her anyways. But anyway, I just thought this is as somebody who is, I mean, like, look, we're going to be surrounded by this more and more. It's going to raise questions over and over and test the law and create new law. And so this is a pretty recent decision. And I thought it was good for all of us who've been using these kinds of platforms to be aware of what that could look like down the road. Colin, I'm going to turn it over to you. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so my case comes out of Erie, Pennsylvania. This is back in prime COVID era in October 2020. It's about 1:30 a.m. in Erie, Pennsylvania, and a man named Jeremy Jones and his friends see another man named Corey Kendig. He is leaving a strip club in Erie, Pennsylvania. And one of Jones's friends confronts Kendig. Allegedly, Kendig had engaged in fraud, this scam regarding the sale of a used truck to his father. And so this friend of Jones punches Kendig in the face, and it leads to this melee among Jones and his friends and this individual, Corey Kendig. At one point during this altercation, Kendig is on the ground, he's being choked, and he pulls out a gun, he shoots Jones in the stomach, and Jones dies from the gunshot wound to the stomach based upon the loss of blood. He's taken to the hospital, he's treated, and so Kendig has what's described as a closed head injury, a severe injury to his right ear as well, and he's taken to the police barracks. And so we have a trooper in Erie, Pennsylvania. His name is Nicholas Stoller. He is appointed as the lead investigator on the case. He goes to the strip club with other officers. They talk to witnesses. They do follow-up interviews. And there's actually video footage of what happens during this altercation showing Kendig being choked and being attacked by multiple men when he shoots the victim in the stomach. Notwithstanding that video footage, in Erie, Pennsylvania, it is this lead investigator who brings the charges. And so he files an arrest warrant affidavit that doesn't reference the video, doesn't reference the claim of self-defense. He claims Kendig is guilty of murder, aggravated assault, recklessly endangering another person. Eventually, August 2021, the case goes to trial, and unsurprisingly, the jury finds Kendig not guilty on all accounts, finding he acted in self-defense. Okay. Kendig then turns around and brings a civil rights action against Trooper Stoller, claiming, among other things, malicious prosecution. And he claims it was malicious prosecution because you failed to include evidence that I was acting in self-defense. And so the defense, of course, claims qualified immunity. And they claim two things. One, there was no clearly established federal law prohibiting what this trooper did. And two, we want to distinguish between evidence of innocence and evidence of an affirmative defense. And so the claim by the defense is, it's one thing to claim mistaken identity. Someone else shot and killed this victim. It's something else to claim an affirmative defense, like self-defense, where you admit to actually killing the victim. And this went up to the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, which issued its opinion last week, and they rejected, thankfully, this distinction the state sought to draw, and they find no, evidence of self-defense is evidence of innocence, and so that's not a viable claim. Mm. Ultimately, though, there's two conclusions by the Third Circuit. The first is to say, we are establishing a law now, but it wasn't clearly established at the time of this arrest. So there's no relief. There's qualified immunity. Mm. But the law they establish is when either a police officer or a prosecutor is filing an affidavit for an arrest, they need to include evidence that conclusively establishes innocence or an affirmative defense. They don't need to include it if it only possibly or probably proves innocence or in affirmative defense. Wait, in other words,
say that, explain that to me better.
In other words, this video clearly showed he was not the aggressor.
I'm trying to focus, Colin. I'm trying to focus.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening here.
In other words, the video in this case shows multiple men attacking the defendant.
Right.
One of them choking him, and he shoots because he's being choked. Conclusively, this is self-defense.
Sure.
Meaning going forward, to avoid damages, an officer or a prosecutor would need to include, look, here's the evidence this guy was acting in self-defense.
Really?
Imagine, yeah, which is a good ruling. I like
it. It's a good ruling, but I'm shocked at it.
But the language is conclusively.
Okay.
And so imagine it's a little bit more of a gray area, mm-hmm. right? The defendant is shoved to the ground. He's being punched, but he's not being choked, and he shoots the victim. Is that conclusively self-defense or only possibly or probably self-defense? And so I don't like this language mm-hmm. that the court adopted of it has to conclusively prove self-defense.
What if the language was more likely than not?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
It's conclusively that gets me.
Yeah. Because that's going to... Okay, so how does this work in favor of the defendant? Like, would it just kind of like... It would invalidate... like an arrest warrant in this case? Is that what it would
be? It would invalidate it if we had a hearing and this was brought up that it wasn't included. It would also allow for a civil action for malicious prosecution, false arrest, if this information is not included.
Okay. And this is the third circuit, though.
This is the third circuit. So the federal circuit covering, you know, Delaware,
yeah.
Pennsylvania.
Do you think it'll be appealed up?
I don't think the Supreme Court will take it.
Yeah, it's not it doesn't seem like the kind of question they would entertain.
And it's interesting because, I mean, as we know, on the one hand, I like this because if you go to the grand jury, there is no obligation on the prosecution to present evidence of even affirmative innocence, clear innocence. So I at least like the fact that there is this requirement that you disclose, look, there's a strong claim, conclusive claim of self-defense. I just wish, to your point, the bar were a little bit lower.
Okay. I'm trying to understand how this is going to function. So let's say they issue such a warrant that says, this guy is probably innocent. We're arresting him anyways. I mean, like, how could they prosecute somebody then? I mean, like, it just feels like there's no point to the arrest then. I'm confused. How is this supposed to operate?
I hope it operates in exactly that sense the officer in this case, if they had watched the video, would have to include in their affidavit, look, this guy killed someone. He shot him in the stomach, but here's the video. Mm-hmm. I'm appending to my affidavit, and it shows him clearly defending his life because he's being choked to death. I hope they just wouldn't file it in the first place. Now.
Right. It would force a prosecutor to bring charges that make sense in a situation like that versus like, you know, murder one type of thing.
But in your other example where you're saying they were just fighting, no one was actually choking him out or, you know, pulled a knife on him or something like that. They wouldn't have to because it falls into the possible probable category.
Yeah, it's not conclusive mm-hmm. evidence of self-defense. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's what I would regard as a small win against qualified mm-hmm. immunity.
Yeah.
It's not even a win for this particular case because it's prospective as opposed to retrospective.
Yeah.
But I at least like the holding in some sense for some cases.
The law is so interesting. It surprises me once in a while. interesting story. I guess we like it, but not 100%. We're on board 90%. And it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out going forward.
And to
see
if other courts across the country adopt a similar standard.
Yeah. I mean, like, this lays the kind of a groundwork for others to bring the same kind of defense then. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else you guys want to? And by the way, I didn't give you guys a chance to even jump in if you had anything to say about the UFO gate stuff. But if you wanted to also address that.
Isn't it up to like 14 now, the number?
I don't know.
Scientists or researchers or whatever.
I feel like if I keep going back and checking on it and updating people, then people are really going to tune us out. I'm just going to leave it alone now.
There's some discussion online that the Steven Spielberg movie Disclosure Day is a quasi sequel to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That's my input.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. I watched, when is that coming out?
I think like June or July.
Okay. All right. We'll hold on to our hats for that. And by the way, guys, our new season of Undisclosed is dropping soon. We're going to drop the trailer in a couple of weeks and, you know, make that your early summer, you know, summer vacation. Listen, it's going to be great. I'm really excited. All right, guys. Thank you, Colin. Thank you. Hi, Mithal.
See you guys later.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye. Hey, Undisclosed listeners. Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered 1 or 2. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with 3 different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being $1, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, onto the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Romero Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.